Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. We are in the midst of trying to contact and have contacted my guest for today. Before introducing her to you, I want to tell you a little bit about my own thinking that this person kind of really captures and epitomizes in an important way. When I was working on my book on guilt, shame, and anxiety, I became very interested in evolution, how human beings have evolved. We humans have such a capacity for violence, and all indications are we've always been that way throughout evolution. On the other hand, we've always had this great capacity for social relationships, on an intense personal level, not seen elsewhere in the animal kingdom. Violent and loving, we are. And one of my theories in the book on guilt, shame, and anxiety is we evolved to have these negative emotions partly in order to control, suppress, manage our anger, our violence, our willfulness, so that we could live in intimate groups. Now, I've just finished, and this is a new announcement, I've just finished a new novel. The novel is, at this point, just finished, is called Dogs of the Dawn, 20,000 B.C., when humans met dogs and changed each other forever. By the way, I have lost, no longer in contact with my agent of many, many years. I'm looking for a new agent and then a publisher for this book. If any agents or publishers are listening, this novel. One of the concepts that evolved for me in thinking about evolution and writing about people 20,000 years ago, right on the threshold of a huge explosion of culture and community, which would bring many difficulties with it. Thinking more and more about it, I realized that one of the most important, super important aspects of language, of early language, had to be an emphasis on kindness, caring, and loving words. Kindness, caring, kind, caring, loving words. Does that sound superficial? That we need to talk with each other through the feelings and with the feelings of kindness, gentleness, sensitivity, awareness. Sound too much like the 60s or some sensitivity group? I think it's one of the most important things in the whole world and one of the most important decisions we can ever make. And that is to be kind to one another. And in my new novel, again, just finished it. Haven't sent it out anywhere yet. Just finished it. I make that the centerpiece of the human struggle. Treat each other in a kind way. My guest is Orly Waba. Orly, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. You heard my little introduction, kind of meshes with your work, I believe.
I totally did, and it 100% aligns. Thank you so much for having me back on the show.
Well, I had Orly on the show a few years ago. I don't know when exactly. It's kind of lost in my
been
archives.
Some time.
When was it?
It's been some time. I think it was a couple of years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, a couple of years. At that point, I don't know how many people had heard of Orly, but my wife found her on the internet. Worley had founded an organization that on the motto of Life Vests Its Side, which she'll tell you about, and was describing herself as the person who wanted to spread kindness. In the few years since she was on the show, and I don't credit the show for this, Orly has become an international figure. She's even done a TED talk, which I haven't been able to do. I think I'm too radical for Teddy. Her name is Orly Wabaugh. The first name is spelled O-R-L-Y, and her second name, W-A-H-B-A. She calls herself an educator, entrepreneur, community activist. For over 10 years, she's worked a lot with teens and younger kids, with local charities and other organizations, a number of Jewish organizations, and also Kids Kicking Cancer. And she's an executive member, and she'll be telling us all about this, of World Kindness Movement. Does this sound a little bit like my introduction? And she has a motto, kindness, don't just do it, live it. Stay with us, folks. This is not pap. This isn't just the cherry on ice cream. This is really important stuff. So I happily give the mic over to somebody I wish were my friend, but, I mean, we haven't ever met each other, Orly Wabaugh. Orly, talk about who you are, where you've been, what you're doing. There's a lot going on in your life.
There is a lot going on. First off, I have to say we definitely are friends. I know that we haven't met, but I have to tell you that through the organization and the work that I've done with the organization, which I'll talk about in just a bit, some of the people that have become the closest friends to me are people that I actually have not met yet in person. That's really the beauty and the power of social media. So I just want to put that out there. I'm definitely your friend. You can count on me as a friend, that's for sure. Thank you so much,
again,
like I said, for having me on the show. I appreciate it. Just to give you a bit of a background of, you know, what Life Vests Inside is, I started this organization about 4.5 years ago. And just a bit about my background, I was a middle school teacher for 7 amazing years. I don't think a day goes by since I left my job teaching that I don't talk about my years teaching, because it was honestly the most transformative years of my life. And the connections I made with the students, just the amount that I grew and that I learned, it definitely was a big stepping stone to bring me to the work that I'm doing with Life Vests Inside. And through my years of teaching, you know, kindness was a very, very key component within every single class discussion. It wasn't just something that we discussed every so often. It was actually embedded into the curriculum that I was teaching, kindness, compassion, empathy, helping really to empower people to see their value and that they matter and that they're significant. And that even though, you know, a person might be 1 in 7 billion, the number that matters the most is that they're one. And during my years teaching, I saw the amazing impact that just something as simple as empowerment had on the children, not only to just help them in terms of their interpersonal relationships, but also academically, for them to grow academically, for them to grow personally, for them to feel that they have the ability to achieve and accomplish anything that they set their mind to. And so Life Vests Inside was yet another step on that pathway ever since I was a little, and I always say I attribute it to when I was, I remember being a 4-year-old kid, you know, dreaming that and believing that I was meant to do something really major in this world to bring people together. Not understanding why animosity existed between people of different backgrounds and religions and races, and wanting and knowing that I was going to be some sort of a player in helping to change that, not knowing how, but always feeling that passion ever since I was a kid. And my years teaching and Life Vests Inside, the work that I'm doing with Life Vests Inside, was in a sense pieces of my puzzle coming together to turn that dream, you know, into a reality. So about 4.5 years ago, I left my job teaching, which was super hard. Originally, it was only going to be for 1 year. I wanted to see what would happen if I gave my all to my dream. And very often, I think many of us can be fearful of taking that leap of faith, especially I wasn't leaving a job that I hated or I was dreading coming into work. I was leaving a job that I loved and I knew that I was good at and I was so passionate about. But I knew that there was a bigger dream out there for me to pursue. And I said, if I believe in this enough, I got to go all in and take that chance and take that risk. Because who knows what can happen? And 1 year ended up turning into now 4.5 years and keep going strong. The mission of the organization of Life Vests Inside is to inspire, empower, and educate people from all backgrounds to lead a life of kindness. But when people ask me, you know, the question, all right, so the organization, it's about kindness. That's the one word you would use, and I always say, no, it's actually not, which is funny. But if I were to use only one word to describe the entire organization and what it's about and what it embodies, it would really be the word empowerment. It's about empowering people to see their value. Because unfortunately, in today's world, so many of the social issues that are plaguing people today, both youth and adults alike, if you continue to ask the question of why that issue exists, not just put a Band-Aid on the problem, but actually ask why and keep asking why until you get to the core root of it, so much of it can be attributed to a lack of self-value, people not recognizing that they matter, that they are significant, that who they are is enough. People, you know, looking for happiness from external things where really the truth of the matter is happiness can only come from within you. People looking to be validated from these external things that society might tell us should validate us, but it doesn't matter how much money you have in your bank or how many friends you have or how popular you are or athletic you are. Those things don't give you a true sense of validation. They may, to the external world, make you look like, oh, you're so happy and everything is good in your life, but the only person that could give you that validation is you. And a lot of, you know, the philosophy and the psychology behind what we do with Life Essence Side sort of came about because I went through my own hardship, as we all have. Every person in this world has a story, has a, you know, a story that they've gone through, a challenge that they've gone through that's helped bring them to another aspect of their life. And mine, and I oftentimes say, you know, sometimes within our most difficult situations in life, those are the things that bring us the greatest reward, even though we don't see it when we're going through it, because when we're going through it, we're not happy people. Sometimes we can get really upset or feel like we lose hope. So a lot of it started back when I was, and I'll just touch on this a little bit, but it started back when I was 15 years old. I was a kid that was probably the most self-conscious kid out there. I had no self-esteem whatsoever. I was shy like you can't imagine. I wouldn't speak, even though now people can't get me to stop talking. And at the time, we had a fire in my house, and we lost everything. Thank God everybody was okay. Physically, everybody was okay. I was one of five kids. And but it does something to you, you know, when your house is done. But it wasn't only that. It was sort of one of those years that I think, again, almost everybody can relate to. One of those years where everything that could go wrong went wrong. And when you thought it couldn't get worse, it got worse and then worse. And my dad had lost his business. And it was one thing after the next. And I didn't want to be weak because I knew that, you know, when you see your family break down, you see your parents break down, you see them hurting, the last thing you want to do is be more of a burden. So there I was, a 15-year-old kid, still not knowing who I am in the world, keeping all these emotions and feelings inside, not being able to talk to my friends because they didn't know what to say. I don't blame them now, but at the time, I just felt so alone. And I broke down. And one day, I went to bed. And I just didn't wake up the next morning. And I sort of fell into a state of really dark depression. When I say dark depression, I mean I had suicidal thoughts. I didn't want to continue going to school. I wasn't in school for a couple of months. I stopped believing in myself, but forget about that. I stopped dreaming. I stopped believing that I was able to achieve anything. And I was angry at the whole entire world. And I just wanted to give up. But what hurt me the most is that when I was home, no one, not one person called. Not one. Not one person came to visit. So it sort of felt like, well, if I wasn't here tomorrow, would anybody even notice? Would it make any difference? Because the fire took all the physical possessions, but, you know, not having someone there, that sort of destroyed my spiritual strength. And I was sort of left as, like, this shell. And I remember not wanting to go back to school at all. I wanted to drop out of school altogether. I was forced to go back in, but I wasn't the same kid when I went there. I was, you know, that kid sitting in the corner wearing all black, writing morbid poetry. That was me. I was that kid. And one morning, it changed. not that it changed drastically or suddenly, some magic thing happened, but I woke up and I was looking at myself in the mirror. I was really looking at myself in the mirror. And the scariest thing happened. That four-year-old kid that dreamed of changing the world, I didn't see her looking back at me. I guess it was as though somebody stole her. And it scared me more than anything. And I said, I can't let this be my end. I know how far down I've become. I know how far I've already got. When you dig yourself into a hole, it's so much easier to just keep digging. It's much harder to stop and say, hey, let me try and dig myself out. You don't even think you can. I said, I can't let this be my end. And I made a promise to myself. And honestly, it started with that promise, but it didn't end there. And I promised myself to be there the way I wished somebody would have been there for me. But it was more than that. I promised myself to see people in the way that I wished somebody would have seen me. Because on the outside, I was saying it was okay, but it just wasn't okay. And I just wanted someone to see beyond that. And they couldn't. Maybe I didn't want them. But I didn't want people to feel that way. Those next couple of years of high school, I was sort of walking alone, which is hard to do as a teenage kid. It's intimidating as it is. But it gave me the greatest opportunity in the world, something that I think as adults, so many of us haven't had the opportunity to do. And that's really to fall in love with me for me. It wasn't about how many friends I had or who thought I was cool or that group thought that I, they wanted me to hang out with them. It didn't matter. Those things didn't matter because I felt I was ready on my own. I had to pick myself back up on my own two feet. And I got to fall in love with me for me. And through that, I got to find my voice. Because I was always that kid. I had all these thoughts in my heart, but everybody else was able to express themselves but me. That's how I always thought. It was like I had all these thoughts in my heart, but I didn't know how to express them. And then suddenly, that all changed. Literally, this was like a flip of a switch. I remember this. I was a senior. It was the beginning of the year, and we were on a high school seminar. And we were in a circle. We were all sitting in a circle. And the teacher was talking about obstacles. And I did something I never, ever did before. I raised my hand. I had something to contribute. And for the first time, I had the courage to contribute. I don't even know why I raised my hand. And what I found is that as I was speaking, my own peers, kids that I used to be intimidated from, were listening to me. This little, self-conscious girl. Or used to be. And suddenly, kids were coming to me afterwards and asking me for advice. And the more I gave, the more I healed. And the more I gave, the more I healed. And that's when this love, this real love, came about of forgiving and for kindness and realizing that it's the greatest strength because it empowers us to actually see our true value and worth. In a moment of giving and in a moment of kindness, we're validated for the right reasons because we catch a glimpse of our potential, of how special we are, of how unique we are. And how much we are all a piece of the puzzle. Different shapes, different colors, but everyone the same size. At that point, I was literally getting involved in every single after-school project I possibly could. I remember my mom, she's like, who are you? Where's my daughter? Because I seriously changed overnight. I mean, I was involved in so many things. I was directing a play. I was in a play. Me in a play. I never even spoke. And I was working with at-risk kids. I was organizing community activities. And I found myself. I found my voice. Of course, as I said earlier, I went to going into teaching after college. I went to college for film production because for me, it was always about communicating a message. And I believe that what more amazing way and more powerful way to communicate a message than through the power of media. It has an amazing opportunity, amazing ability to inspire people and touch them and communicate a message that you wouldn't be able to communicate otherwise. And so I was very much in love with that medium. My years teaching, like I said, these concepts were concepts I brought with me from when I was a little kid, wanting to see my students, wanting to help them see themselves, see the beauty in themselves, see past the flaws, past the mistakes, past the test marks and the popular clicks, to see who they are. Because that's when opportunity for real change comes along. And everybody realizes that we're all the same. We're all the same. We put on this facade. That's nice and great and good. What happens when a person goes home at night? What are they feeling about who they are? Are they only basing their value on how many people like their Instagram picture? or is it based on something much more? And that's what I wanted to get to the core of. My summer off from teaching, this was back in 2010. This is right when the concept, the idea of life as inside of the organization was coming about. And I wanted to be able to show people the ability that kind of has to go from one person to the next. Now, it had been granted 7 years since I did film. I was scared out of my mind. Literally, I was so nervous, you know, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I wanted to be able to show this to people. So I said, I have the summer off from teaching. Why don't I write a script and show through film without dialogue whatsoever? You don't need dialogue to communicate kindness. I want to show through film the ability that kindness has to seamlessly go from one person to the next. So the script came about all based on real life, you know, moments I went through. Every single scene. And I said, imagine if we did it in one shot where it doesn't, there's no cuts, it just continuously flows. Shot the film that summer. I was so nervous. My family thought I was out of my mind because I had to put in a lot of my own money into this film. And they didn't know where it was going to go. They're like, oh, what do you think you're doing? I had a lot of that being told to me, that I'm crazy. I still get people telling me I'm crazy. Who do you think you are? So many other people tried doing what you're doing before. You think you're going to change the world? You think you can? I get that a lot. So discouragement definitely comes with pursuing your dream. It will come, but it's only a person's reflection of their own inability to pursue their own. And you have to understand that. But there I was doing this, so super scared, and knowing that something crazy was going to come from this film. I proclaimed it that I was going to get this film, that I was going to make a film to reach the world. But back when I was in college, I said that. And right when the film was shot, went back to school the following week. But that four-year-old kid, she was dreaming. And oh boy, was she dreaming big. And I said, I got to go all in. That's when I told the school I'd be taking the following year off to see what would happen if I gave it my all. No one saw this film for 1 year. I didn't put it up because I was such a perfectionist. I unfortunately still am. I say unfortunately because sometimes it's not good to be a perfectionist. You have to be able to let things go. And a year after, right when I left teaching, it was October, things were still not perfect. I didn't have my website. I didn't have this. I didn't have that. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a teacher for 7 years. I had no nonprofit experience or marketing experience or social media or anything. And I said, enough is enough, Orly. You have to put the film online. Who knows who's going to see it? Maybe one person will see it. Maybe I could touch one person's life. Maybe I could touch one person's and save them in some way. And so I put it online. I knew nothing about how it was going to reach anybody. Literally, I had people call me all the time, how did you make this film reach so many people? I said, I don't know. I put it up online. I did nothing. And within a couple of months, the film went crazy, crazy viral. I literally, honestly, in the beginning thought, this is what happens when you put something on YouTube. Like, I wasn't familiar with YouTube or social media whatsoever. And all I was doing literally every day for about 21 to 22 hours a day, literally, is answering people's comments online to the video. It went insanely viral. At this point, it's reached, I can't even count the number because it's not even the only number on our channel. It's been uploaded to so many places. I mean, I'm talking about well over 100 million people. And that's really what landed me the spot to speak at TED, which was super, super nerve-wracking, by the way, just saying. And that one video is how the organization started and kick-started. But we've come so far from there. It started with one film, and film is definitely a big aspect of what we do at the organization because we don't only utilize media like film and social media, but we also use education. We utilize the power of education through our educational curriculum. We utilize technology and through one of our initiatives called Project Hope Exchange. We also utilize events. We create these amazing, engaging, collaborative events that take place all over the world. So we utilize many means in order to get to that main goal of inspiring, empowering, and educating people from all backgrounds to lead a life of kindness. But more than that, to give them the tools so that they can create their own reality, that they can see the potential they have to make things happen. Because it's one thing if everybody goes to a select group of givers in the world, but what we're looking to do is increase the pool of givers, helping people see that you don't just have to have money in your pocket to be able to give. Everybody, from the president of the company, the guy cleaning the floors in that building, everybody has something to give, something that makes them special, something that they are here for that no one else can take their place. And it's about empowering a person to see that, because then what you do is you bring the possibilities, these crazy possibilities before them. Think about all the additional lives that they can change by simply believing that, you know, a bit more. But one of the other main things, you know, the reason why it's also super powerful is that there are many organizations out there, right, dealing with a problem once it becomes a problem, putting a Band-Aid on a problem, which is, I'm not at all putting down any other organization whatsoever. Meaning if there is a problem, let's say, for example, there's substance abuse, so there's going to be, you know, the anti-drug approach, and then there's bullying, and there's the anti-bullying approach, and there's war, and there's the anti-war, and anti. But I ask everyone, do you think that something negative can undo something negative? It only perpetuates more negativity. What we look to do is look at the cause, the root, and prevent the issue from coming into existence. That's really powerful, but it's hard to see because people like to see the issue because then they fix it. They see that measurable change. But what we're looking to do is prevent those issues from actually coming into existence with something as simple as empowerment and kindness. So it's a very, very exciting thing. I can definitely tell you, I mean, over these years, we've accomplished a tremendous amount. Just to give you some of the highlights, over these years, like I said, we've developed a program called the Kindness Ambassador Program that I'm super proud of. It's amazing. It's all volunteer run. It's a program for the people by the people. We have over 6,000 ambassadors in 120 countries. It's sort of like a virtual online training program. I don't want to say so much training. It's sort of like a group of like-minded individuals that want to make a change within their life, personally and professionally. Very easy to sign up. Sign up to become an ambassador. You could be as engaged or as little as engaged as you like. It's up to you. Because everyone goes at their own pace. We're not giving you have to do this or do this. Everybody finds their own path. And every week, we send out a weekly kindness task via email. Something short, simple, 2 to 3 minutes to complete. Because, again, kindness is about increasing our awareness. People engage in that activity, and they get to connect with these ambassadors and share stories. And it's an amazing supportive network of people that care so much about each other. As I was telling you, so many of these people have become my dearest and closest friends, and we've never actually met in real life. The amount of love and admiration that goes on this group is something wild. But what's so beautiful is that we have a vast array of people from every different background and culture and religion. So what the world sometimes tells us, that is impossible to happen. You cannot get all these different people, you know, with such a high level of acceptance and tolerance. Well, I'm going to tell you that they're wrong, because that happens every single day on that ambassador group. Because they say that education is the key to tolerance. And when you create that loving, warm environment, that's what takes place. The Kindness Ambassador Program has been an amazing program. We have Project Hope Exchange running that we've organized with one of our partner organizations, Adversity to Advocacy. And through Project Hope Exchange, people can go online and record a 30-second anonymous audio message of hope based on the adversity that they're facing. And what we do is we collect, aggregate, and share those audio messages. So if there's three buckets. There's physical health, mental health, and life challenge, because everybody's gone through adversity. So through that platform, you can come onto the site and either record a 30-second anonymous message or to a 30-second anonymous message of hope. And your 30 seconds can have a continuous ripple on so many people's lives that have been going through or are going through the same adversity that you're facing. We have hundreds of messages, thousands of people that are listening to these messages, and we have hopes of building out this program to become a mobile app, which I'm really excited about. We've also, like I said, developed our educational kindness curriculum that brings kindness, compassion, empathy into the curriculum. We've only developed so far for grades K through 5, one unit of study for language arts, but we have hopes of developing this further. It's just that it requires a great deal of funding in order to move it to that next level. And finally, there are endless initiatives. We have our second music video went out called Revolution of Love. It's a song that was designed and developed for Life Inside for annual Worldwide Dance for Kindness. So that's gone out this past year. Dance for Kindness is one of our biggest and most exciting events. Every year we host an event called Dance for Kindness. It's a worldwide freeze mob, flash mob. took place in over 50 countries, 100 cities last year. It was our fourth annual. This is going to be our fifth annual event. I cannot believe that it's our fifth annual. And last year, like I said, it was such an amazing event. We had over 12,000 dancers that took part, hundreds of thousands of people that were watching live, and millions of viewers that were seeing it. We were featured on the Today Show. Thankfully, we had such an amazing sponsor behind us, Dignity Health. They were so spectacular. They have a branch of their own called Hello Human Kindness, and they very much believe in the concept of kindness. And what it is, on World Kindness Week, we kick off World Kindness Week with this worldwide flash mob where people join together to dance the same song, same dance, all happening on the same day. And what we've done is opened it up for musicians prior to the event to submit a demo of a song that they create to do with kindness. And we have what is called the Anthem Contest, where people can vote on which song they like most. And then Life Fest Inside professionally produces the song. And that is the song that is danced to all around the world. That Anthem Contest is going to be opening up real soon. And one of the other exciting things that I'm actually currently working on, and you were talking about this earlier, is a book. And the book is actually called Kindness Boomerang, which is the name of the film, the short film that sort of sparked Life Fest Inside. It's definitely a much more difficult process than I ever imagined, because I never wrote a book before, but I'm in the editing process now, so I'm hoping to get this next draft of edits in to the publisher within the next 2 weeks, let's hope. But that is a really, really, really exciting venture. And over these years, speaking in schools and in companies about kindness and about its importance, about how to implement it and how it actually increases efficiency and productivity and happiness within people and within the workplace setting and within the school setting. So, it's been a very exciting few years, I must say.
We are listening, folks, to Orlie Wahbah, O-R-L-Y Wahbah, W-A-H-B-A. This is, I think, the longest that I have just sat and listened without interrupting a guest, because it's just so worthwhile what you're saying. It's so exciting, Orlie. It's so right on. I have things I could ask you, or do you want to just pick up on another theme?
Feel free to ask me whatever you like. Something that I would definitely recommend, especially for listeners, we just recently launched, it was just last week actually, we launched something called the Daily Kind. And the idea is, every day on our social media, of course, we're creating content that really touches people and connects with them. Giving them, again, it's all about the awareness, because the minute with it we're aware, then we start seeing those opportunities. Similar to like our Acts of Kindness cards, we have two sets of cards, one called Acts of Kindness cards and one called Catching Kindness cards. This is very, really exciting. So the Acts of Kindness cards, this is something I started with my students, and it turned into what it is today. Each deck has 26 different cards. And on the back of the cards, there's a different act for each one there. Something small, like hold the door open for someone, or give someone a heartfelt compliment, or pay for the person behind you, or, give someone a hug, or whatever it may be. There are all these small, simple acts that we can all do. And the idea is you perform the act, and then you pass the card on to someone else, to keep the kindness going. And you can even record your story with your act directly on our website. They always say that the beauty about these cards, it's always fun to have them and to do them, but it's always super fun to give them out to just like random people. I love doing that. And I always find that people say, oh my goodness, I got the card, the exact card I needed. I remember I tell the story because it always makes me laugh. One act of kindness card, I always give out the cards to people and tell them to do that act. One time I gave out a card to someone and it said on it, hold the door open for someone. All right, very nice. So the next day they call me up. They're like, Orlie, you're not going to believe me. I said, what? They said, the second you gave me that card, everywhere I went that day, there was a door that needed to be opened. There was a door, and there was a door. And I started laughing. I said, by the way, those doors were there yesterday, and they were there the day before. It's just that now, because you saw that, you're starting to become more aware, and you're starting to see those opportunities around you. Those acts of kindness cards are super awesome. We have them for kids as well, designed for kids. One of the other cards that we have, and the reason I'm going to bring it up is because we're actually starting a YouTube series. It's called Catching Kindness. So, the idea behind these cards is if you see somebody doing an act of kindness for someone else, not for you, because it's easy to see when someone is doing something kind for you. But let's say you see somebody on the street doing an act of kindness for someone else. or in your workplace or in your school. You give them this card, and on the back
what
it
is
says,
what,
tag. Yeah, go ahead.
What is your website?
The website is www.life.
You're breaking up a little, Orly.
Oh, sorry about that. Can you hear me? Is that okay?
Yeah, but you're breaking up. Keep on talking.
Okay, cool. So
the website is
Life Vest Inside. It's the name of the organization, lifevestinside.com. And all the information can be found on there to sign up as an ambassador, to get your Acts of Kindness cards, your Catching Kindness cards. So these Catching Kindness cards, when you give it to somebody that you see doing an act of kindness to someone else, it says on it, tag, you're it. You've just been spotted doing an act of kindness. Now it's your turn to catch someone else in the act. I love giving these cards to people because the reaction on their face is just priceless. There they are, being who they are, because that's the idea. We all make a difference and we all make an impact in this world just by being who we are. It doesn't matter what job you hold or what title or position you have. You're you. You walk into a room, you're impacting people just by you being you. And so just the other day, I was on the train, and there was a gentleman. He got up for this woman on the train. So I went over, and I said, this is for you. He goes, what is this? I said, this is for you. And I gave him the card, and he flipped it over. I can't tell you the smile that came up on his face. There he was just doing something, not because he was going to get an award or somebody was watching him, but just because of who he was. But by giving him that card, two things are accomplished. Number one, I'm now increasing my awareness to what kindness looks like. I'm exercising my eye muscle, my kindness muscle, because your eyes is really, you're seeing the acts of kindness. And number two, now that guy can continue on his day, that the next time he's on a train and there's someone that needs to sit, the likelihood of him standing up increases tremendously because he's going to remember how great he felt when he received that card. Wow. Somebody's watching me. Somebody was inspired by me. But I found that there was a third party that also got impacted by this card, the person that received the kindness. Because naturally, the two would start conversing, and they would talk about the card. And this has happened so many times over the past few weeks. I've been giving out a lot of these cards. It's amazing to see. So we are actually starting a YouTube series. We're hopefully going to launch our first one really, really soon called Catching Kindness, where we stage a scenario, and we have hidden cameras, and we basically, our job is to catch a genuine act of kindness in the making. And then we come out from the woodworks, and we speak to the people. But the idea is that when we acknowledge the goodness that someone is doing, not just the negative things that people do, when we acknowledge the good things that people do, what we do is we're really encouraging that sort of behavior on a continuous basis. And their feelings of gratitude and their feelings of purpose and meaning increase. And when a person's sense of purpose increases, the likelihood of them contributing something greater to society also increases. That's how we affect real change in this world. So it's super exciting. I started talking about this because I was originally talking about the Daily Kind. What we did is we started a newsletter. It's a 30-second read. Because, again, everything's short. Unfortunately, we're very used to this world, everything being super quick. So people could sign up for this newsletter. Like I said, it's a 30-second read. And every day we send you an act of the day, a positive affirmation, a quote, a kindness quote, and a kindness media, whether it be an article about a good news story happening in the world or whether it be a really great TED Talk having to do with positivity or whether it's a really great music video or any sort of video. It's some form of media. So it's like your one-stop shop for everything kindness, leaving you really feeling great and kickstarting your day on a positive note. Because the way that we start our day is generally the way that we continue it.
Tell me about the TED Talk, how that came about and why it was so tough for
what
you mentioned.
So the TED Talk, this is pretty wild how this happened. This is back in 2013 is when I spoke at TED. I spoke at TED March of 2013. What they did that year is something that I only think that I don't know how many times they ran it. It was something called a TED Talent Search. They were traveling to countries around the world and basically accepting submissions from people to do sort of like a mock TED Talk. And then from there, they would select people that would speak on the main TED stage. So someone sent me the link, and I said, you know, who knows if I'm going to get it. I doubt it. It's crazy, whatever. I'm going to fill it out. But I filled out the application, did a one-minute video, submitted it. I get the call that I was one of 30 people selected from the U.S. to do a talk here in New York. I was freaking out. It was the scariest moment ever. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do because I never really prepare a talk. I've never actually written what I can't work like that. It's very hard. And I needed to like put my thoughts down on because it has to be a certain amount of time. It's not like you have just unlimited time. It was the scariest feeling. So I went in the following week and did that 5-minute talk. Talks went up online, and the way that the TED Talent Search went was that the talks worldwide, not just from the U.S., but all the talks, the ones that received the highest ratings and comments or whatever it was, they invited a few of the people to speak at the main TED stage. And a couple of months down the road, I found out that I was selected. Scared out of my mind again. Here I am standing up on the main TED stage. I was placed like second to last in the conference. They had me like close it up, like do the last day of the conference, which is by far the scariest thing because you've seen everybody go before you. People that are talking about how they're changing the world in these most amazing, extraordinary ways. And there I was, this little girl coming and talking about kindness. I was so, I mean, even though it was very powerful in terms of the message I wanted to give across, oh boy, was it intimidating. I'm definitely going to say it was very, very intimidating. But it was a pretty crazy experience. And so that was back in 2013. And I just recently, just about a month ago, did a TEDx talk in Guernsey. It's an island in the English Channel. Beautiful island, beautiful people, just amazing, amazing place. And I spoke about the idea of taking a dream and turning it into reality and how we actually go about that process and how we make our dreams come into reality. But, of course, talking about the concept of kindness and its ability to transform. That was a really fantastic experience, this last experience in Guernsey. Absolutely fantastic.
Now, Aurelie, my impression was that TED Talks have to be scripted. Did you have to be scripted? Because
so
it's hard to imagine you scripted.
Yeah, so this was the hardest. This is why TED itself, the week of the main TED, I'm going to tell you the truth. I was like a basket case. I was crying most of that week. I was feeling very low, first of all. I'm very like straight person. I'll tell you exactly what it was. I was super nervous. I was also going through some hardships in my life and a lot of discouragement from the people that were closest to me, sort of making me feel like, what do I think I'm doing? I'm never going to be able to accomplish this. Because you have to understand, I've been working on this organization for 4.5 years. I haven't taken a dollar. I haven't made a salary in 4.5 years. That's not easy. I invested literally all my savings. I put in over $100,000 into starting this organization, and I haven't made a salary. The only way I'm able to do this, and sometimes people ask me, they're like, how are you living? I live with my parents. That's the truth. I live with my parents. If I wasn't living with them, I wouldn't be able to do this. But it makes it extremely difficult. I know that my parents love me, and I love them so much. But at the same time, you know, it's hard. I'm not a parent yet, so I can only understand, you know, based on what I'm thinking, is that I understand as a parent, it's hard to see, you know, you're seeing your child struggling because it's difficult. Doing what I'm doing, there are definitely obstacles all the time. And anybody that tells you, no matter how successful somebody is, anybody that tells you that there are not moments where they doubt themselves and that they are scared and they want to give up, I mean, they're lying to you. Everybody goes through those moments, myself included. And so from the outside, you know, they see the struggles that I'm facing and the fact that I don't have the funding and it's so, so hard that they'll sometimes use that to discourage me from continuing on forward. All that was happening at this exact time. So I was feeling low as it was, and there I was needing to script something that I couldn't script because it was something that was in my heart. I don't know how to script things. So I think that week literally maybe went through, I didn't have my talk until the night before the talk because, I mean, again, I can talk for hours about just what happened and what the process was. But it was really, it was very hard for me. That was very hard for me. The time thing was also hard for me. I mean, ever since I was a kid, time was always difficult for me. I was that kid that had a hard time with, standardized exams because of the aspect of time. it was always a difficult thing for me. I'm not sure why exactly, but it was. And it made me super, super nervous. But I think the reason I was most nervous is because I knew I wasn't only going on that stage and speaking for myself. I knew I was going on that stage and speaking for everybody that was believing in me and believing in the message and wanting there to be a change in the world. Every person who in their heart of hearts has that childhood belief that we can really bring this world together because we can. So I knew it wasn't just me. And I was so afraid to let them down because at the end of the day, that's how I got there. So it was a real big sense and feeling of responsibility. But since then, I definitely learned, you know, since then, I definitely, when I give talks, I stopped. That was the worst thing I could have done, was trying to strip something. But, you know, I better to go with bullet points and then, you know, see where it goes and just manage the time by looking at it. But it scared me. At that time, it really scared me because there were these major people in the audience. And I think I was thinking too much about also who was like sitting there and, oh my goodness, this could be a great opportunity. Maybe somebody can help me because I'm going to. I think I was looking at it like that too much. I was psyching myself out too much. That
were you pleased with the outcome, Orly?
That's a good question. Honestly, and like this always surprises some people when I tell them, I've never watched my TED Talk. Not that one. I haven't. I haven't been able to bring myself to watch it. And I really haven't, because I felt like I didn't. I mean, even though people tell me that they loved it, I just felt like it was just very hard for me. Very hard for me to see it. Because I guess it also brings back a lot of the emotion of stuff that went on that week.
Sure.
And, you know, the feeling
help me understand. Did you give a scripted talk or did you speak off the cuff?
No, it had to be scripted, but it wasn't exactly scripted. Meaning, it wasn't like I had submitted to them. Most people know do. You have to. But that week I had to change it so many times because it was like, oh, do this and then do this or don't do this. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't do this. I don't know. You know, it was I felt like I was being told so many things and I wasn't just able to be. And I think that was what really made it difficult for me. So it was somewhat scripted, but not. It wasn't exactly. Like I didn't say, you know, what everything I was planning to say or how I was planning to say it per se. But, yeah, it was a pretty scary experience. But what I learned, you know, from it is that no experience, you know, I said to myself, regardless of what happens at TED or after TED or whatever, it's not going to stop me from continuing to pursue my dream. It wasn't like some major thing came about from it that, oh, somebody, whatever, saw it or heard it and they came and they came to my rescue to help the organization get on its feet and really see the potential. It wasn't like anything like that happened. You know, and the truth of the matter is, it doesn't matter because before it, after it, I'm going to still pursue this. I know that I was put in this world to do this. So I'm going to do it. And whoever wants to come along for the ride, I welcome them because this is going to change the world. It already is doing that. The stories, the countless stories from people from around the world sharing how it's changed their perception of others, of people from different backgrounds and cultures and religions, of opening them up, of helping them see something greater within themselves, of saving their life, of helping them, of inspiring them to start an organization, of inspiring them to, you know, fix a relationship with a loved one, inspiring them to pursue that goal that they never ever thought that they could, or break out of their shell. That, to me, those are the successes. Those are the people that I'm, you know, I've just, That's where the biggest pride comes for me. My hope is that the right people that have the right intention, because an organization like this, for it to be successful in terms of, this is my belief, when you do something for pure intent, you need to bring along people that have that same pure intent. And that's not necessarily always easy to find. That's why I would say that those that they're going to end up finding this organization and wanting to help it grow in that way, it's both of us are just as lucky because you need to find it from that purity. It's got to come from that purity. Otherwise, it's fake. And you can't change the world based on something that's fake. It's got to be so real, and it's got to be for the right reasons.
What kind of support group do you have? I mean, you're doing so many activities that could require multiple expertise. Do you have a core help group, or are you pretty much on your own?
That's a good question. So for a long time, I was just on my own. It was just me in my parents' house, in my home office, typing away, plugging away on my computer. Right now, currently, what we have In the office, we have like a donated space here in the city, which is really, really nice, which is great that we received. So we have about five people that are working with me, whether it be on social media or helping to organize events or doing graphics. There are five people in the office with me. And then we also have our developer and our video graphics guy as well. But we also, the reason we're able to reach so many places, like with our, for example, our event, is through our volunteers. Every year, for example, Dance for Kindness this past year, we had 130 group leaders. This could be anybody. Somebody listening onto the call right now that says, wow, I want to organize an event in my city. People could sign up to be a group leader. They receive a handbook of the step-by-step method of how to do it. They read it. They reach out to me. They watch a tutorial video. I get onto Skype with them, get them set up. Very much the teacher-friendly type of situation. And basically, I help guide them through doing their event. I'm talking about people. We have, our youngest group leader is like 10 years old. Our oldest was 76. And these are people, some of them, that have never done an event in their life. So everybody can learn. It's just about how to teach someone. That's really the key. I was managing 130 group leaders. They're organizing their event. That's how we have the event in so many locations. So we have a great deal of volunteers. But that's really our team. We're really, really tiny. We definitely need, in order to grow the way that we want to grow and develop these, like, you know, self-run branches within various cities that incorporate Life Essence Side events and activities throughout the course of the year, that requires a tremendous amount of effort and a tremendous amount of funding and a tremendous amount of resources. But that's exactly what we're working towards. You know, we're working with, for example, like I said, this past year, we had an amazing sponsor that came on board. It was, you know, it was such a phenomenal, phenomenal company, Dignity Healthcare, health insurance company on the West Coast. And they, you know, they helped. We're looking to develop partnerships with companies of that nature that believe in the vision and the mission, that are just not about throwing a name on something. They were actually group leaders. They organized the events in their hospital. And basically to come on board, not only to get benefit themselves from being involved in this, but also then to assist the organization in continuing to grow. So there are, that's definitely a method that we're going for in terms of corporate, you know, corporate funding in that regard. And then, of course, you know, personal funding, people contributing. If every person, imagine, if every person that watched Kindness Boomerang and was inspired by it gave a dollar, we would never have an issue with funding. But it's hard to make that, turn that into actuality. A lot of people don't realize, you know, the fragility of where the organization is at. And, you know, if you look at it from the outside, it's very easy. People can look at something from the outside and go, wow, it looks like it's, you know, a multi-million dollar company. But really, we're struggling every single day. We're going to keep going. But it is a struggle, which makes sense. You know, we're looking to change the world. It's not exactly an easy task. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort.
Your team, do some of them get paid, or are they all enthusiastic volunteers?
So the team, the core of the five people that I was mentioning to you, the way that we work in our organization is that in order to come on board for pay, and again, unfortunately, we're not able to pay people a lot. Like I said, I personally don't take a salary. We have a program where people first come on board as interns because we want people that want to be here because they really love what we're doing. So they come on board as interns, and if we have a really great relationship and we see that we're very much aligned, then we bring them on board for hire because these are people that are working, like, full-time. Then, like I said, we do have volunteers that are doing things on a volunteer basis, like our group leaders and all that. But the core of the five people that are currently with the organization are all being paid.
We've got about 2.5 minutes left. Perhaps you could tell folks how you got the title for your website and your organization, Life Fest Inside.
For sure. And once again, I just want to remind everybody, you can definitely go to the website. It's lifevestinside.com. And you can also connect with us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, /LifeFestInside. We actually, I'm going to tell that story real quick, but we have something going on right now that could be amazing for people. There's an opportunity for us through Ellen and Kind Snacks. We're basically, they're having it that they came together to put together a grant that they're going to grant $1 million and an opportunity to appear on the Ellen DeGeneres Show to someone out there spreading kindness in the world. This is a huge opportunity. This is like crazy. People can nominate anyone that they want to nominate as somebody that is spreading kindness in the world and that they feel that is deserving of it. And one person receives $500,000, five people receive $100,000, and they all get featured on the Ellen Show. So people can also nominate at lifeessenceside.com/Ellen, or they can see it on the Kind website. That's there as well. You know, Life Essence Side, a lot of people ask the question of, how does that have to do with kindness? So this story took place back in 2007. I was going away with my family on winter vacation, and we had a stopover. And as I was getting off the plane, I was checking my voicemails. At the time, there was a young girl in my community, 7 years old, that was diagnosed with leukemia. I didn't know her personally, but I was praying for her, and everybody was praying for her. And when I got off the plane to switch, I was listening to my voice messages, I heard that she just passed away. And I was extremely devastated. But the first thing I thought about was my seventh grade students back at home, because they had lost a classmate of theirs only you know, 3 years prior when they were in fourth grade. And I said, what am I going to do? How am I going to explain to them? You know, just before winter vacation, they started opening up to me about that for the first time, about that experience, asking really hard questions. You know, why do bad things happen to the people? I don't understand. And I just started getting through to them. So what am I going to do when I get back home? I know that they're going to hear about this. We're all from the same community. How am I going to be able to explain how something yet again so tragic and devastating happened? How do you stay afloat in a world that sometimes seems to just be pulling you downward? And I get onto the plane, and these thoughts are running through my mind, and the stewardess sits me in a seat I'm not supposed to be in. But I'm a very firm believer that everything happens for a reason. So I'm sitting down. How do you stay afloat? How do you make sense of it? And I have tears in my eyes. And I looked to my left, and right there on the wall of the plane was a small sign with three words that would change the course of my life. And it said on it, life vest inside. And I looked at it, and I smiled. I looked up, and I saw it. I said, okay, I got it. The message is, you know, your life vest. What is a life vest? No matter how much you push down on it, it pops back up. And so the message I took was, order your life vest, your ability to stay afloat in a world that sometimes seems to be pulling you downward. It's inside of you. It's through the kindness that we bestow on others and through the kindness that others bestow on us that we keep each other afloat in a world that sometimes seems to be pulling us downward, because we can't prevent the obstacles and the mishaps and the curveballs from coming our way. They're going to come. And oftentimes they're going to come when we least expect it. But what we can do, what we have the power to do, within our ability to do, is to throw somebody a life vest, a lifeline of kindness. Even though they're still surrounded by those troubles, they're still surrounded by those waters, that vest is the difference between life and death. It's what's going to keep them afloat and give them the hope that everything will be okay. And so, life vest inside. Our life vest is inside of us.
Orlie, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful to have you on the show. Orlie Wahba, W-A-H-B-A, life vest inside. Thanks for one of the fastest hours I've ever had.